I hope by now we've got the idea that it's very elevated, but it's beneath Bhava Bhakti. It's not on as high a level as Bhava Bhakti. In fact, it leads to Bhava Bhakti. And it actually concludes in Bhava Bhakti, actually, at the beginning of Bhava Bhakti. And Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti can also lead you to Bhava Bhakti. If it happens that according to your eternal relationship with Krishna, which is already there in your heart, if it so happens that you do not have the type of eternal relationship with Krishna which involves rag, in other words, your relationship with Krishna is not in Vrindavan, not in Dwaraka, probably in Vaikuntha, more likely than not in Vaikuntha. So if your eternal relationship with Krishna happens to be in Vaikuntha, which it may be, we can't say at this point. That remains to be seen as things develop, hopefully in time. So then you may go in the mood of Vaidhi to Bhava and then to Prema. And even on the level of Prema, you'll be in that mood of Vaidhi, which means Krishna's God, I know Krishna's God, I'm serving Him because He's God. But there's still an overwhelming mood of love for Him as God. So one can come to Bhava Bhakti through either Raghunuga Sadhana or Vaidhi Sadhana. And it's not just a matter of choice, it's a matter of what your eternal relationship with Krishna is. So how are we doing now? Let us just make a little beginning then with Bhava Bhakti. Have a look at the verses I've just given you, chapters 17 and 18. The first verse is giving a definition of bhava. So devotional service in pure goodness means it's transcendental. It's totally transcendental, not just sufficiently transcendental, so that you don't fall down. It's completely transcendental. It's on the Sudha-Sattva platform beyond the modes of material nature. So that means it's not sadhana. It is, what's the term for beyond sadhana? Sadhya. It's sadhya bhakti, it's perfect. Devotional service. It's not practice. So, the Swarup Lakshana, then the essential quality, which is like the basis of what is Bhava Bhakti, is that it's devotional service performed on the level of, the transcendental level of pure goodness. Then the two marginal qualities are that the heart is softened and one experiences different transcendental tastes So all these points are made here in this verse.
Devotional service situated on the transcendental platform of pure goodness. And what does it do? It causes the heart to become softened.
And there are various tastes which are involved in the softening of the heart, but the tastes and the softening are two different things. So we include them as two tattvastha lakshanas, two marginal qualities. So, this is called bhava. And because of its exalted nature, it's actually considered to be a ray, one small ray, but still directly a ray of the sunlight of prema. So, which gives us a little idea of what prema is like. If bhava is just a little ray of the sun of prema, then prema is again another thing altogether. This is already pretty high, way beyond us on our level of Vaidhisadhana Bhakti, or even someone who is beginning or involved in the cultivation of Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti. This is really quite something. Srila Prabhupada does make the point, if you look on page 131, look in the first paragraph, down towards the bottom of the first paragraph. At this stage, the stage of bhava, that is, the devotee is on the platform of uttama adhikari, perfect devotion. So, uttama adhikari, really speaking, means bhava bhakti. And bhava, the term bhava, bhava bhakti, translates bhava, the word bhava, means ecstasy. Or, Prabhupada says, ecstatic love. So bhava, if you want a synonym, bhava means ecstasy. So what does bhava bhakti consist of in practical terms? What is it made of? Bhava bhakti is made up of different types of bhavas, different types of ecstasies. And this we'll discuss after our 15-minute break. Anyone have any comments or questions so far? So let us meet again at quarter past.
To the Prabhupada.
We just began to discuss about bhava, and we talked about the characteristics a little bit. Then we gave a little definition of what is bhava, and bhava bhakti. Bhava means ecstasy, basically, and bhava bhakti means ecstatic love or devotional service in that mood of ecstatic affection for Krishna. As distinct from pure love, prema. Prema means pure love. So here we're talking bhava bhakti. It's like a ray of the sun as compared to the sun. So because it's a ray of the sun, it has the nature of the sun. And in this case, the nature of love of God is that it's an overwhelming, all-consuming experience of ecstasy and love.
Bhavad ecstasy. So Bhavad Bhakti means devotional service which includes some ecstasies. But it's not just pure and all-consuming like prema. So here we're listing out five types of bhavas, or in other words, five types of ecstasies. So you can just write them down. We're not going to actually go into them in great detail, but we'll at least give you a simple idea of what they are. So we have five types of ecstasies, mainly. At least that's what we're going to discuss. For further reference, you'll find the descriptions, elaborate descriptions, in part two of Nectar of Devotion. Part two of Nectar of Devotion consists of an elaborate discussion of these five in this order. We're going up to chapter 19, if you recall. That's the end of part one. So part two begins, of course, with chapter 20, and in that is discussed Vibhava. Then Anubhava is discussed in chapter 27 alone. Satvika Bhava, which we shall call involuntary expressions of ecstasy. That's basically chapter 28. Vyabhichari, we'll call this transient. This is discussed in chapter 29 to 31, and Staiba is permanent ecstasy, which underlies the whole experience of ecstasy and of Bhava generally. And that is discussed chapter 32 to 34. So as I said, we're not going to really go elaborately into these things, although I'll give a little description. But if you want to go into it further, it is very deep, so it's not easy to really understand, to be quite frank. But you can read through. So this is part two of Nectar of Devotion, from chapter 20, concluding with chapter 34. An elaborate description of the different bhavas, which begin to manifest on the level of bhava. Therefore, it's called Bhava Bhakti, but which really manifest more fully, at least much more substantially, on the level of prema. So, the discussion given in these chapters 20 to 34 is really in terms of how these things manifest in prema. Prema is full of different bhavas, and on the level of bhava, the bhavas are manifesting. Because bhava is like a little part of prema, basically. So now what all this means, in simple terms, that which stimulates ecstasy. So what is that which stimulates ecstasy? It shouldn't be too difficult. Krishna. Krishna stimulates ecstasy. And also Krishna's devotees do, because they're related to Krishna. So when a devotee thinks, when a devotee is on the level of bhava, thinks of Krishna, then this stimulates a certain mood that, oh, Krishna is so wonderful, or whatever, which then gets expressed. Krishna, like, to give a fairly clear example, Mother Yashoda, well, she's beyond bhava. but she's experiencing these same bhavas in a very high level. So she's thinking, oh Krishna, she sees her little boy Krishna. Oh Krishna, you're so wonderful. So Krishna's stimulating her, so Krishna is the vibhava. And it then stimulates her to express. How does she express it? She embraces Krishna. So the embracing Krishna becomes the anubhava. And as she's embracing Krishna, thinking how nice Krishna is, he's my son, and in all her different ways, then she may start crying. Now the embracing Krishna is like a deliberate thing. She embraces Krishna. But the crying, it just comes. It just follows in the course of this, the gradual sort of unfolding of these different ecstasies. So the crying is part of sattvika bhava. It is a sattvika bhava. There are eight. Are you getting the basic idea here? And this is very high. This is way beyond us. So, but anyway, that's definitely the basic idea. So let's just have a look here. Let us just have a look. Yeah. Another example. Krishna, one thinks of Krishna, well actually there's a very good example, I guess ideal example, is here on page 131 down on the bottom of the page. Maharaj Ambarish was put into difficulty by Devasana Muni. Oh, right, okay. No, I know this. Thanks. Okay, Maharaj Ambarish was put into difficulty. So what did he do? He thought of Krishna. And he thought, I guess, I mean, it would appear he thought, he's in great danger. Devasana's releasing this very extraordinary weapon at him. Personally, he's coming to attack him, said by Devasana. So he thinks, oh, Krishna. And what does he think? Oh, Krishna, please protect me. So this is the vibhava, He's thinking, Krishna, please protect me. And in his mind, he then takes shelter of Krishna. And he's fixed in the concept of how Krishna will protect me. So this is the anubhava. And then, as is referred to here, when King Ambarish was put into difficulty by Devasa, he began to think of the lotus feet of the Lord. And thus there were some changes in his body. And tears were falling from his eyes. These symptoms are activities of ecstasy. So there you see there's a sequence of vibhava, Krishna, anubhava, let me take shelter, and sattvika bhava, that tears come. Which is sattvika bhava. Just to have a look, let's just have a little look at chapter 28, which is about sattvika bhava. Page 223. Down the bottom of page 223. There are eight symptoms of, Prabhupada calls it existential ecstatic love, or in other words, sattvika bhava. Becoming stunned, perspiring, standing at the ears of the body, faltering of the voice, trembling of the body, changing of bodily colors, shedding of tears, and devastation. So these are the Ashta Sattvika Bhavas. Then, what may follow on from that is Vyabhichari Bhav, and I believe that I've...
Let me just have a look here. Vyabhichari Bhav. I assume we'll find it in chapter 29. Let's see, yes.
233. There are some bodily symptoms which express overwhelming ecstatic love. Disappointment, 33, disappointment, lamentation, humility, guilt, fatigue, intoxication, and so on. So, to again just follow the sequence, taking Mother Yashoda, because perhaps she's a little more vivid example, that she sees Krishna, and she thinks, oh, Krishna, my son, that's Vibha. So then she feels impelled, let me embrace him, that's Anubha. She embraces him in a mood of deep love. Tears come to her eyes. That's one of the Satvika bhavas. But then also, so that becomes like a main manifestation emotionally. But then there also may be different transient emotional conditions which come and go while she's embracing him and while she's crying. Different ideas may come temporarily. Some disappointment, I don't know what relation it is. This is the idea, that these are like subservient bhavas, which are not as constantly present as, for example, the Satvika bhavas, but the state of Mother Yashoda crying in ecstasy in the loving exchange with Krishna may be punctuated by the appearance of these other types of ecstasies, which suddenly enter and then go, and then may be replaced with another one which then goes, like this. So does that make sense? Okay, making sense. Then, what is listed out, the last one, is in a sense the most important one, because it's the only one which is totally permanent. It's always there. And it is like the basic theme. The basic theme in all these bhavas manifesting in whatever ways they may. And that is the sthayi bhav. And you know what the sthayi bhavs are? What are the permanent features of the ecstasy of a bhava bhakti, or particularly a prema bhakti? You know, it's a technical term, but it means the nature of one's actual relationship in one of the five rasas. So it means either in the mood of Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, or Madhurya. So the underlying theme of the different emotional expressions and experiences and thoughts of a devotee on the level of bhava is the particular nature of the sthayi of that devotee, which is permanent and which doesn't change, of course. Although on the level of bhava, obviously it's not fully manifest like on the level of prema. But seeing bhava means a ray of the sun of prema. That means it is clearly there, and it's clearly there all the time. And it's like the sort of essential nature of one's bhava. That depending on your particular sthayi bhava, then different vibhavs will stimulate you. Like different features of Krishna's nature will stimulate you. What stimulates Mother Yashoda because of her sthayi bhava is a different vibhava or different part of Krishna's nature than what stimulates the gopis. And therefore, different anubhavs manifest. Mother Yashoda wants to feed Krishna. The gopis want to kiss Krishna. The cowherd boys want to run around and play with Krishna. So the anubhavs become different in terms of the sthayi bhavs. Of course, the sattvika bhavs will be there anyway. And the vyabhichari bhavs will also tend to be there. But again, in different ways in terms of the sthayi bhavs. Okay, so that's all I really want to say about
these aspects of Bhava Bhakti. Anyone have any questions on these aspects of Bhava Bhakti? All right. So, let's see. So where to from here? So we talked about Maharaj Ambarish. Then, so Prabhupada explains, this is the first page of chapter 17, page 131. On the level of bhava, these ecstatic symptoms appear outwardly, but then the idea is that then they go. Whereas on the level of prema, they don't go. They're constantly there. Maharaj Ambarish, the idea is that under this, these extraordinary circumstances, Devasa Muni is attacking him. So he becomes fixed in thought of Krishna. And these different things come, he ends up crying. But then the danger goes, and he stops crying. And he becomes sort of, you could say, relatively normal externally. So on the level of bhava, the bhavas are appearing, but only temporarily. Whereas on the level of prema, they become permanent. Therefore it's said, we'll discuss, I guess, tomorrow or whenever we get to the level of prema, or the discussion of prema. Therefore it's said that a devotee on the level of prema, his or her activities cannot be understood by a person on the material level because they're totally pervaded by these overpowering bhavas which are like sweeping through the devotee's nature and manifesting. Although the devotee may also suppress them if the devotee is a preacher. But if a devotee is not a preacher, then they just become like otherworldly, basically. Anyway, the devotee on the level of bhava, these things are coming from time to time, but not always. Although Prabhupada does say, right at the bottom of the page, page 131, that they appear outwardly, but then they do remain within the mind. In this way, the devotee is on the level of bhava. Not just sometimes in bhava and sometimes not. But externally, the bhavas are not really manifesting all the time. But internally, there is an absorption on the level of ecstasy, which Prabhupada says on page 132 at the top, is called samadhi. So samadhi begins on the level of bhava. And we know one of the characteristics of bhava from chapter 1, do you remember the characteristics? That bhava bhakti. Devotee in bhava bhakti is automatically in transcendental pleasure, meaning bhava. And bhava bhakti is rarely achieved. Rarely achieved. So then, page 132, Prabhupada talks about how you can be elevated to bhava. Two ways. Has everyone written all this down? Okay. So there are two ways.
Being elevated to bhava. One is like the normal way, and one is an unusual way. We'll probably keep this thing going till it just... collapses altogether. Not just of any devotees, but of very advanced devotees, meaning devotees who are on that level. And this does actually include like undeviating devotional service in their association. In other words, being a devotee, rendering devotional service very steadfastly in the association of very advanced devotees. So that's the normal way. Then there's a way which is not normal. Prabhupada compares it to if you go to university, or if you want a university degree, there are two ways you can get it. One is you just go to university and just take the course and pass, and you get your degree. Another way, which happens, but it's very unusual, is that you may be given an honorary degree. But if you want a degree, if you're actually feeling I want a university degree, then don't take the second option, because the likelihood of your getting it is really remote. But it happens. It does happen. So this other way, which is not the normal way, but it happens, is special mercy of Krishna or his devotee. And then basically the rest of this chapter is devoted to discussing this and giving different examples of this. You can see if you go down to the next paragraph, the last paragraph on page 132, Prabhupada is giving Narada Muni as an example of someone who went through the normal process, but he refers to it as an example of someone rising to the stage of ecstatic love by executing the regulative principles of devotional service. So this is number one. This is not a third category. This is number one. So Narada Muni and his story, you know his story from the first canto. He was the son of a maidservant, and then some very advanced devotees came and stayed in his mother's house, and he served them. He engaged in devotional service very nicely in their association. So in this way, his attraction for Krishna became aroused, and he came to the level of bhava, actually. Then, so Prabhupada goes on discussing that over on page 133. There's a nice verse referred to about a quarter of the way down the page. This statement, or Prabhupada saying, that it's essential that one constantly associate with pure devotees who are engaged morning and evening in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. In this way you'll become purified. And then the evidence is given, 325.25 from Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a very important verse, Satam Prasangam Mamavirya Samvado, very important verse, that when a person associates with pure devotees, then the sublime potency of my devotional service can be experienced. So what is that? This is like this Shuddha Sattva Visheshatma, this transcendental Shuddha Sattva potency, which is the essence of bhava, bhava bhakti. Then, going down to the bottom of page 133, we get some examples of the other category, category number two. And
there are
a number of different divisions of this. There are three main divisions. You can get mercy. So this is all here. 1, 2, 3. You can get mercy through someone speaking or glancing or heartfelt wishes. And examples are given.
The examples are there. I assume you saw them and caught them.
Speaking at the bottom of page 133, there's the example of Lord Krishna speaking, like offering a blessing, speaking to Narada, and saying, I wish that you may develop unalloyed devotional service, bhava bhakti or prema bhakti. So the idea is that Lord Krishna spoke like that, and as a result, Narada got it by Krishna's special mercy. Then going over to page 134, when the inhabitants of the Jungla province saw Krishna, then their glancing, because of their glancing on Krishna, they became stricken with feelings, ecstasies, emotions, bhava, through that glancing. Then heartfelt wishes. Narada speaks some wishes, expresses some desire that, speaks some wishes about Sukadeva Goswami to Vyas. Then again, there's the example of Prahlad and the womb of his mother. Because Narada was merciful to Prahlad. Therefore, Prahlad came to the level of bhava within the womb of his mother.
And right at the bottom of the page, there's the mention of Mrigari. Mrigari came to the level of bhava by the good wishes of Narada also. And right at the very bottom of the page, Prabhupada says, this ecstatic love for Krishna can be divided into five divisions, which will be described by Sri Rupa Goswami later on, which are those Viva, Lamina, Satvika Bhav, and the other Bhavas that we had on the board a few minutes ago. So, let's see, how are we doing? Let's just carry on. Let's go on into chapter 18. Chapter 18 begins with,
like, some basic characteristics of a person on the level of bhava. Now, just considering that list of the five types of bhavas that we had on the board earlier, which category, which type of bhava do you think these nine would fall into? Just think about how we defined those bhavas. Vibhava, being that which stimulates ecstasy. Anubhav, meaning an expression of that ecstasy that one is feeling having been stimulated. Sattvika bhav, being an emotional, involuntary emotional expression. And what was it? Vyabhichari bhav, being like lesser, transient emotional expressions. And sthayi bhav, being the permanent ecstasy, permanent mood of ecstasy in one of the five rasas. Very good. Well done. I didn't think any of you would get that. So these are anubhavs, actually. Anubha, what is Anubha? It's an expression. An expression of what you feel about Krishna. So what do you feel about Krishna? You feel so inspired, you just want to serve him 24 hours a day. And you're always perseverant. And because you're so inspired by Krishna, therefore you're completely detached from anything material, totally detached. And because you're very purified in heart, you're feeling very humble, no pride. So these are all anubhavs.
But the interesting thing about these anubhavs is that they are, you know, they're like quite easy to see, or relatively easy to see, and they can't be imitated. The sattvika bhavs and the vyabhichari bhavs, which are the emotional ecstasies, emotional expressions, they can be imitated. It's not hard to cry, roll on the ground, or, you know, be in anxiety, feel guilty, express some transitory emotions, temporary emotions. It's not very hard. Anyone can do it, really, if they try. But to be engaged 24 hours a day in Krishna's service, and to really be very humble, and always chanting Hare Krishna, you can't imitate that. You have to actually be on the level. Otherwise you may chant for a while, then you'll stop. You'll be humble sometimes, then you'll get angry or proud, agitated in some way. So therefore these symptoms are given here in Nectar of Devotion as being like the important symptoms that one should look for if one wants to understand if a devotee is on the level of bhava, rather than those emotional symptoms. And even having said that, on the level of bhava, those emotional symptoms and the various other symptoms, they're just beginning also. So they're, as we read about Maharaj Ambarish, they're not permanently exhibited, just sometimes. Even though internally they're going on, but externally they're not permanently going on. But these things are very sort of practical symptoms, which if you look at a person carefully, then you'll be able to see. And they can't be imitated. You have to actually have the qualification. So if you want to understand who may be on the level of bhava, then consider in terms of these nine. They're very important. And this is why that virtually this whole chapter, or the greater part of this chapter, is devoted to discussing these nine symptoms. And in fact, we've given you one verse which lists them out, just for the sake of interest. It's the second verse there on the verse sheet. We don't expect you to learn it, but it's there. So these are like observable symptoms of bhava. So let us just go through these nine. And see how much time we have left when we get to the end. So what about utilizing one's time? 24 hours a day. Consider the example of Srila Prabhupada. Or Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Srila Prabhupada, he would take rest at night at maybe around 11 or so, something like that. And he'd get up at 1. Then he'd chant for an hour or two, and then he'd translate. And then the devotees would be up, and then he'd go for his morning walk during the japa period, maybe 6 o'clock or something like that. Then he'd come back and give class. Then the whole day he'd be involved in organizing the movement and meeting people and doing so many things. Then in the afternoon, normally after lunch, he'd take rest for 1 hour or so. Then again, a little later in the afternoon, he'd be up, he'd have darshan. Generally, the devotees would come into Prabhupada's room and anyone could come in every afternoon, usually, about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and spend 2 hours, 3 hours. And then they'd go, and then Prabhupada would carry on, and then again take rest at 10. So, or 11. So this is what you call a clear manifestation of being very anxious to utilize your time in devotional service without getting deviated and being absorbed in service 24 hours a day. Very nice example. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur also had a somewhat similar program, at least in principle. So advancement of devotees can be understood in terms of how much they're fully engaged on and on and on through the day without just taking time out to do something which isn't essential in devotional service. Then the devotee is always reserved and perseverant. There's a nice example given on page 136. Maharaj Parikshit, when he understood that he'd been cursed to die, he didn't panic. He just went to take shelter of some qualified people who could help him prepare for death. So when he met those people, what did he say? That you just talk to me about Krishna and just let the snake bird come, I don't care. Let the curse come on my head, I don't care, but you just carry on and let me just hear about Krishna from you. This is very perseverant. He's up against such a huge obstacle, but he doesn't care. He's just carrying on cultivating Krishna consciousness. Another example I'm quite fond of in this regard, many of you may have heard me mention it before, is the example of Sridhar. You know that story? When Krishna left Vrindavan, Krishna told Sridhar just to wait here and I'll be back. And Sridhar said, I'll wait right here and I won't move until you come. So he just waited and waited and waited. And after a little while, people were coming and saying, you can't just stand here. You've got to bathe, eat, you've got to look after yourself. But he said, no. Krishna has told me, stay here. So he just stayed there. He persevered. And in fact, he stayed there apparently for 4,500 years until Lord Chaitanya came and embraced him. And told him, see, I told you I would come back. So his perseverance won out. So a devotee on the level of bhava is perseverant like that. But unless you're on the level of bhava, unless you're on the level of transcendence, where no longer the modes influencing you, then how are you going to be so perseverant? You may persevere for a while, but then you'll think, well, you know, I have to take prasadam, I have to sleep, I should do so many other things. But this rigid perseverance, which is unbreakable, is only possible on the level of bhava. So when you see a devotee who is so perseverant, then you know this devotee must be on the level of bhava. Then detachment. A very nice example again is given, page 136, of Maharaj Bharat. Time came. Not that he was cursed like Maharaj Parikshit, but his time came. He became old. So then he understood, time to leave home. There's a qualified son to take over the kingdom, so let me go. So what did he do? He was so attracted by the beauty of Krishna that he gave up. He gave up all types of attachment to family, children, friends, kingdom, etc., as though they were untouchable stools. So this is real detachment. Not that he struggled to give up the attachment and somehow he managed to get out and sort of hang on without coming back. No. He just gave it up. He was totally detached. He just went out and that was that. So that's a very good example of detachment. Then pridelessness, complete humility. Well, there are many nice examples. Prabhupada gives the example of Lal Babu, one devotee, who even though he was a big, big man, he gave up everything and became a beggar. Voluntarily. Not because he went bankrupt and he was left with nothing and then he was forced to beg. But he just gave up everything and he voluntarily went to the houses of his enemies where they would laugh at them. They'd just look at you. You're a fool. Just begging like this, wearing torn clothes. But he did that. He exhibited pridelessness. So such humility, such deep humility, can only be manifest and in an ongoing way manifest all the time in the character of one who's on the level of bhava. Then great hope. Rupa Goswami is given, very nice example, that I'm a hopeless case. I have no love for Krishna. I don't even like the process of developing love for Krishna. And I can't think of Krishna. I don't know anything. I have no knowledge. I have no piety. And I'm low born. But still I'm hoping. Still I'm fixed in the hope that Krishna, you'll please give me shelter. So this asha bandha, hoping against hope. There's no hope, but I'm still hoping. This is a symptom of bhava. Not that I'm thinking, well, I'm a devotee, I chant 16 rounds every day, I follow the principles, therefore I hope that, or I'm confident Krishna will help. As was mentioned right at the beginning of the discussion on bhava bhakti means uttama adhikari. And uttama adhikari means the devotee really feels I'm the most fallen. So as the most fallen, I have no hope. But still I'm hoping. Not that I'm the most fallen, I have no hope, so I'll give up and just become a nonsense. No. I have no hope, but I'm still hoping. So such a consciousness is only possible on the level of bhava. Then eagerness. And you'll see that the way Prabhupada's discussing eagerness, it's the price for success in Krishna consciousness. You have to pay that price. So we've given you this verse actually again, because it's also connected with Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. But the verse at the bottom of our list of verses for today is the verse which is being referred to here. That this intense eagerness, this is the price for bhava bhakti. For bhava bhakti, actually. Of course, the Raganuga Sadhana Bhakta has to also have this a similar type of eagerness. So naturally, it'll be present on the higher level, which is bhava. Then attached to chanting the holy names, the example is given of Srimati Radharani, who's just chanting Krishna's name in separation from him, or Haridas Thakur. Anyway, a bhava bhakta is always chanting Hare Krishna and is always eager to glorify Krishna like Srila Prabhupada. And finally, always attracted to living in a place of the Lord's pastimes. Always wanting to be with the devotees, to be in a holy place, to be in Vrindavan, to be in Mayapur, to be where the deity is, to be in the association of the deity and the devotees, like this. So I think we'll end here. And we'll just continue with the rest of Bhava Bhakti tomorrow, and then Prema Bhakti. So for tonight, please, if you can do a summary of chapter 19, Prema Bhakti, devotional service and pure love of God. It's very short, four or five pages. So, and it's your last assignment. Horrors. Other than preparing for the test. So prepare that. Do a summary of that for tomorrow. And tomorrow we'll complete the discussion on Bhava Bhakti, and we'll try and discuss Prema Bhakti. Any questions or comments? Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So your assignments again, on the whole, were done very nicely. Seems like you're all understanding things very well. Very nice to see. These are the Mataji's. These are the men. You can hand in your assignment from last night, please. We have some more verses. Bhakti Rishma, can you take this? Today, we would before we begin, let us chant the invocation. Prayers to the six Goswamis. Nana Shastra Vacharanai Kanipano Sadharma Samstapako Loka nam hitakarano tribhuvane manyo sharanya karo Radha Krishna padara vinda bhajana nandena mataliko vande rupa sanatano ragujago Sri Jiva Gopalako. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of, because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis, and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Shishad Goswami Prabhu Ki Jai. Yesterday we were discussing mainly about Bhava Bhakti. So the idea was that it is like a ray from the sun of Prema, a ray of the sun. So it's of the same nature as Prema, but just on a small scale. We discussed that there are there's one main quality which is that it's constitutionally of the nature of Shuddha Sattva, or the transcendental internal potency of the Lord. There are two marginal qualities. It softens the heart, and there are various tastes.